Here we go. Rosh Hashanah, Perek Revi'i, Perek Dalet, fourth chapter, first Mishnah. So if you want to, I'm sorry we didn't have the papers, but we'll open it up. So it says the following. Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah Shechal Lihiyot B'Shabbat. When the day of Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbat. So now we have an issue that normally blowing the shofar on a random Shabbat is something which the rabbis forbade. The rabbi said it's not allowed. They called it a chokhmah, something which requires a wisdom, a practice, training, and so therefore it requires a lot of effort, a lot of training for it, and so therefore the rabbis outlawed blowing the shofar on Shabbat. Question is, what happens over here when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, which falls out on Shabbat? Another reason why the rabbis outlawed shofar on Shabbat, this is actually more the main reason, is that they were afraid of carrying. Rabbis were afraid that a person, not everybody knows how to blow the shofar, and that a person might grab his shofar and walk it over to the person's house to be able to blow, or to train, or to practice, and so therefore they're going to carry. So for these two reasons, the rabbis outlawed blowing the shofar on Shabbat. So what happens over here when the holiday of Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbat? Says the Mishnah, "Bamikdash hayu tok'im." In the Beit HaMikdash, they used to still blow the shofar, even on Shabbat of Rosh Hashanah. The reason being that the Rabbanan, rabbinic institutions, did not apply inside of the Beit HaMikdash. Mm-hmm. Why not? For a very simple reason. The whole purpose of the rabbinic institutions is to safeguard coming to do a Torah prohibition. So over here, the rabbis are safeguarding the idea of carrying. The rabbis assume that inside of the Beit HaMikdash, given the gravity and holiness and magnitude of the place, and the fact that it's the Kohanim who are the most spiritually charged people who are involved in it, that this fear or concern did not apply inside of the Beit HaMikdash. So their institutions did not extend into the Beit HaMikdash. So inside the Beit HaMikdash, Hayu Tok'im. They used to blow the shofar even on Shabbat of Rosh Hashanah. Aval lo b'medina. However, not in the Medina. The word Medina over here is a bit of an argument, what it means Medina. Some people interpret Medina to mean any area outside of the Beit HaMikdash, including the city of Yerushalayim. Others, I believe like the Rambam, understood that even Medina means anywhere outside of Yerushalayim, even inside of the area of the Beit HaMikdash and a little bit extending into the city of Yerushalayim, also there you could be able. Medina is only outside of Yerushalayim. So there's a bit of a difference over here into how to understand where the border of the Beit HaMikdash, so to speak, ends. Where does this concern stop and where does the concern pick up? But again, the idea is where there is a concern inside the Beit HaMikdash, you were allowed to blow. Outside of the Beit HaMikdash, you were not allowed to blow on Shabbat. Any questions on that halacha? Pretty straightforward. Says the Mishnah, Mishaharav Beit HaMikdash, once the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Hitkin Rabban Yohanan ben Zakkai, a rabbi by the name of Rabban Yohanan ben Zakkai. This is a famous name. We've discussed him a couple of times, I believe. It's a name we're going to bring up in the next couple of Mishnayot. Rabban Yohanan ben Zakkai was the leader of the Jewish people at the time of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And he instituted a number of new laws to preserve the memory of the Beit HaMikdash and the practices of the Beit HaMikdash, so that people wouldn't forget what was being done in the Beit HaMikdash. So because the halakha differed of blowing the shofar on Shabbat Rosh Hashanah inside the Beit HaMikdash and outside the Beit HaMikdash, Rabban Yohanan ben Zakkai, when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, instituted Shiyehu Tok'im Bechol Makom Shiyesh Bo Bitnin, that you were allowed to blow the shofar in any area which had a court. Why? What's the logic behind that?
A court,
a bit din. Right?
So that's din. The shofar is maybe it's a judgment thing. We blow it on judgment day, so maybe that's why.
That's an interesting connection, but it's more of a legal concept over here. Think about what was the reason why they allowed the blowing of the shofar in the Beit HaMikdash.
Holiness of the place.
Right, the fear of the Beit HaMikdash, the fear of the place, the would prevent someone from coming to do a prohibition. So Rabban Yohanan ben Zakkai said, well, that same concept could extend to any area where there's a court. If there's a court and you're blowing the shofar in the court, generally speaking, the rabbis of the court are prominent people and still fear. It's going to say inside the Beit Din, right? But Momakom Shiyesh Bo Beit Din, or somewhat extending within a certain radius of where the Beit Din is, right? But our concept is that the Beit Din will have control over its people to make sure and instill fear that they don't come to do any kind of prohibition. So the Ben Yochanan ben Zakkai, to keep the concept of blowing the shofar on Shabbat Rosh Hashanah in the Beit HaMikdash alive, he wanted people to remember that they used to do that, he established that even once the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, the holiness of the Beit HaMikdash sort of extended to these little courts in different areas, and so therefore you can continue to blow the shofar on Shabbat in the presence of these courts. That's the concept behind Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. Had he completely eliminated the idea of blowing the shofar on Shabbat, he was fearful that when the Beit HaMikdash would be rebuilt, people would not remember that the law was you're allowed to blow the shofar on Shabbat Rosh Hashanah inside the Beit HaMikdash. So he wanted to preserve that concept, that difference.
That's a major league ruling over there.
Yeah.
Now you can take anything you used to do in the Beit HaMikdash, right, and say, okay, well, if you're in a place like the Beit HaMikdash, you could do it there. Right?
Open, yeah.
I think we should be able to play guitar and, you know, in front of the rabbis and shul on Shabbat because, you know, it's a holy place. The rabbis are here. And, I don't know. They did it in the Beit HaMikdash.
You're not going to come to make an instrument.
I'm just saying, you can take that now and take a whole bunch of other things.
Correct. Yeah. You could. But we're going to be limited to what Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was the leader of the time, felt was necessary to be able to do. We can't really make those institutions anymore today.
Not. But this ends up not going all the way through, right? Because we don't.
So look at that. Well, let's finish the Mishnah, right? So that was what it says. Amar Rabbi Elazar comes to Rabbi Elazar and says, "No, you have Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai's institution wrong. Lo hitkin Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai ela beYavne bilvad. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai only allowed blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah in the city called Yavne. The city of Yavne was significant. You do?
Yeah.
City of Yavne was significant." He means
I
got it?
No, I do.
Oh, yeah. The city of, I don't know if it's the same Yavne as it was.
Oh, Yavne, and actually the Zimushar ben Zakkai there.
Yeah, yeah. So the city of Yavne was significant because
Rabbi Gamliel's buried there.
Yeah, that was the city that Rabbi Gamliel was the head of the court in Yavne, right? That city was significant because it was the city where they moved after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, right, the Supreme Court and all of the rabbis and the Torah institutions moved to the city of Yavne by Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai's token. This famous story in Masechet Gittin where he went to Titus, the general, the Roman general who was destroying the Beit HaMikdash and said, "Ten li Yavne v'hachameha, give me the city of Yavne and all of its scholars to be able to set up a center for Jewish learning and Jewish law." And so says Rabbi Elazar, no, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai only allowed it in the city of Yavne because Yavne served as the substitute for the Beit HaMikdash in that time. But anywhere else that had a court, he said it's no. Amrulo, they responded back to Rabbi Elazar, Ehad Yavne ve'ehad kol makom sheyesh bo bedin. You're wrong. It was both Yavne and any place that had a court. So there's a bit of a discrepancy here between the rabbis as to what was the institution of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai regarding blowing the shofar of Rosh Hashanah, which falls on Shabbat. One opinion says it was only in the city of Yavne, which served as the substitute for the Beit HaMikdash. Others said, and it seems like the majority said, that it's any place that was a Beit Din which served as a substitute for the Beit HaMikdash. So there's a bit of a tension over here and an argument. Today, even when we have Batei Dinim, our Batei Dinim don't serve the same. Today, there's nowhere that they blow the shofar on Shabbat. Even in Yerushalayim, even with different courts around, we don't hold the same stature. Even our courts that we have today, even Jewish courts, don't hold the same stature as they once did. They can't inflict capital punishment. They can't do a lot of things that they once were able to do. And so today, there is nowhere on earth where they blow the shofar on Shabbat of Rosh Hashanah.
That's wrong.
Right. It's not permitted. Any questions on that?
Who is the second Beit HaMikdash or the first?
This is the second.
Second.
Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai is the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. Any questions? All right, let's go to Mishnah Bet. If anybody's got to run, no problems. Ve'od zot haita Yerushalayim yetera al Yavne. He says, furthermore, the city of Yerushalayim, in this following way, the city of Yerushalayim had a step up, had a leg up, before the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, from the city of Yavne, which was after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. Shekol ir shehi ro'ah v'shoma'at ukrova v'yichola lavo tok'im. Any city that was close to Yerushalayim, that could see Yerushalayim and hear the shofar from Yerushalayim and could come very easily within a day to Yerushalayim, also was able to blow the shofar on Shabbat. In other words, when the Beit HaMikdash was around and we blew the shofar in the Beit HaMikdash as well as in the city of Yerushalayim, it didn't only extend to Yerushalayim, it also extended to cities that were close to Yerushalayim, that were right outside of Yerushalayim, but could see Yerushalayim, could hear what was going on in Yerushalayim, and could travel less than a day's distance to get into Yerushalayim. Those cities were considered part of Yerushalayim. And so therefore, they were also allowed to blow the shofar on Shabbat. However, this did not exist once the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed and that power switched over to the city of Yavne by Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. That same law did not extend. Ubeyavne lo hayu tok'im ela bebet din bilvad. In the city of Yavne, they were only able to blow the shofar on Shabbat Rosh Hashanah inside the court itself. It didn't extend to any of the peripheral areas around or surrounding the city of Yavne. So again, what the Mishnah is illustrating here is that there is a leg up, there was a strength to the Beit HaMikdash and the city of Yerushalayim and its law that extended to surrounding cities that did not extend once the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed and that law was passed to Yavne by Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. It didn't extend to neighboring cities. Any
the
questions?
The reason why we don't mention Yerushalayim is because Yerushalayim was taken over and we didn't have access to Yerushalayim.
After the destruction, right. Yes, absolutely.
Right, so you would think, you know, maybe one of the rabbis would have put in here, or maybe they kind of didn't, I'm just not catching it, but when we get Jerusalem back, it's going to pertain to Yavne, and, are they saying if you could see, you could see Yavne the same, they're not mentioning Yerushalayim at all. I mean, they have to be thinking one day we're going to get that place back.
Which one, Yerushalayim?
Yeah.
Well, once that returns, then the ability to blow the shofar on Shabbat will be in Yerushalayim.
Okay, this is obvious.
And in the Beit HaMikdash. Yeah, I think the idea is that Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai...
Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. So, I mean...
You're saying we have Yerushalayim, but we don't have the Beit HaMikdash.
Like today.
Right, so like today. So then we don't allow any blowing of the shofar on Shabbat because it's the Kedusha of the Beit HaMikdash that extends to Yerushalayim, that then extends to its neighboring cities that allows it. Once you don't have the Beit HaMikdash anymore, even with the hold of the city of Yerushalayim, it's not going to make a difference.
No, that part I got. You said that before. But I'm saying when they're allowing the blowing of the shofar in Yavne.
Okay.
Had they been able to take back the city of Yerushalayim with no Beit HaMikdash...
They probably would have given it a similar status to Yavne.
Right. Okay.
They probably would have given it a similar status to Yavne. But I don't think that went on their minds, because I don't think they were thinking about
that. They never thought they were
getting it back. I don't know if they never thought, but they didn't institute anything at that. But you could make you could deduce that perhaps they would give it its status back in similar way to Yavne.
No, because it sounds similar way to Yavne. The status is, this is where the scholars were.
That's really what it depends on.
So it's not the place anymore. Now it's where the rabbis are.
It's the instilling of the fear through the Kedusha of where the rabbis are, where the legal body is.
It became about where the rabbis are.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, 100%. Maybe we could do one more short Mishnah. In Mishnah Gimel, it continues with other institutions that Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai made once the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. This doesn't have to do with Rosh Hashanah, it has to do with a different concept. It says, Barishona, in the beginning, Haya halulav nital b'mikdash shiv'a u'b'medina yom echad. The Torah law requires on lulav and etrog, on Sukkot. So if you look at the Torah only says, Ulkahtem lachem b'yom harishon. The mitzvah from the Torah is only on the lulav for the first day from the Torah. If you're in the Beit HaMikdash, however, there's a mitzvah 7 days, because the pasuk says, Usmahtem lifnei Adonai Elohechem shiv'at yamim. You will celebrate in front of the Lord your God for 7 days. What does in front of the Lord your God mean? In the Beit HaMikdash. You don't get any more in front of the Lord your God than the Beit HaMikdash. So the Torah is telling us that when the Beit HaMikdash was around, the celebration and all of the laws of the Lulav and Etrog applied inside the Beit HaMikdash for 7 days, outside the Beit HaMikdash for only 1 day. Outside of the Beit HaMikdash, they didn't do the lulav past the first day. That was it. What happened now is, so in the temple, today we do the lulav all 7 days. Misheharav Beit HaMikdash, once the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai had another fear. He was afraid that if they continued to do lulav and etrog only for 1 day, as they always did outside of the Beit HaMikdash, but now there is no more Beit HaMikdash, so everybody in Am Yisrael is going to be doing lulav and etrog only on the first day. He was afraid that the concept of doing the lulav and etrog 7 days in the Beit HaMikdash would be forgotten. And so he instituted, he tkin Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, he established sheyehel lulav nital b'medina shiv'a, that they should do lulav and etrog all 7 days of the holiday of Sukkot, zecher l'mikdash, as a reminder for the Beit HaMikdash, of what they used to do. So today, when we do lulav and etrog all 7 days, the first day we're doing is from the Torah. The other 6 days are only midrabbanan, are only rabbinically instituted by Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai as a remembrance to what we used to do in the Beit HaMikdash. Hence why a lot of the laws of Lulav and Etrog are very different in the last 6 days than they are in the first day. The first day, for example, you're not allowed to borrow someone else's Lulav. Right. It has to belong to you. The other 6 days, no problem, you can. On the first day, your Lulav, your Etrog has to be perfect, right? If let's say the Pitom fell off before the first day, not kasher for the first day, you can't use it. Let's say your Pitom fell off on day three, no problem, you can use it the rest of the holiday.
Wow,
it's not, it's still kasher, right? Because the last 6 days, only being Derabbanan, are only there as a remembrance to the Beit HaMikdash. The rabbis dialed back some of the laws and gave many leniencies given that perspective. So that was another thing that the rabbis instituted because to remember the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. The last thing mentioned in this Mishnah, V'sheyehe Yom Hanef Kulo Asur. The day of waving should be completely forbidden. So what does that mean, the day of waving should be completely forbidden? So with here we'll end, we'll just give a little bit of context. There's a korban that needs to be brought on the second day of Pesach. That korban is called? What korban is brought second day of Pesach? Korban ha... We start counting 50 days. Korban ha-omer, right? Second day of Pesach, they bring the korban ha-omer. What does the korban ha-omer allow us to do? There's a big significance to it. Prior to the Korban HaOmer, you're not allowed to eat from any of the new wheat. Any of the new crop that grows, you can't eat from it. It's called Chadash. It's forbidden by the Torah. Only after you bring the Korban HaOmer to the Beit HaMikdash, then you're allowed to eat from any of the wheat which is new, which grew before last Pesach, right? After last Pesach. Okay, so again, like right now, any right. wheat that we're having, you're going to hear people talk, oh, is it Chadash, is it Yashan, right? You'll hear that now. Why? Because wheat that you're eating now grew after last Pesach, which means it's new wheat. You can't eat it until after this upcoming Pesach, until the Korban HaOmer is brought, right? Uh-huh. It's called Chadash and Yashan. It's a real law, right? It's something that today we have reasons why people are not so careful about it outside of Eretz Yisrael, things like that. We'll leave that on the side. But the Korban HaOmer allowed people to eat from the new crop, from the new harvest, okay? That was when the Beit HaMikdash was around, right? The problem is, what happens once the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed? You're not bringing the Korban HaOmer anymore, but you're still not allowed to eat from the crop until the day after the Korban HaOmer would have been brought. So here was the issue. Rabban Yohanan ben Zakkai was worried. Normally, on a regular year, from 12 p.m., right, 12 in the afternoon, on the second day of Pesach, you knew that the Korban HaOmer was brought in the morning.
Right.
Right? So on the second day of Pesach, let's say 12 p.m., everybody started to eat from the new wheat already. Right? Because they knew that the Korban HaOmer was brought. Problem is, now the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. So people are not bringing the Korban HaOmer. Right? If you still allow them to eat before, now what time are you going to determine that they could start eating from the new wheat? You're not bringing the Korban HaOmer, right? If you start to just let them eat from the morning, then what's going to happen? When the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, people are not going to wait for the Korban HaOmer to be brought. They're going to just start eating from the new wheat before the Korban HaOmer. So to avoid that problem, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai instituted that the whole second day of Pesach is forbidden in new wheat. You got to wait till the day after second day of Pesach. You got to wait till the third day of Pesach to be able to have from the new wheat. That's what his institution, so that you don't run into a problem when the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt of eating from the new wheat before the Korban HaOmer is. This way everybody understands it's dependent on the Korban HaOmer. Today, because we have this Safek Yom, we're not sure which is the second day, which is the third day, we have to wait till after the third day to be able to eat. So we add an extra day to be able to eat from the new wheat. The takeaway from this being, in these three Mishnayot, we've seen a number of differences between the Beit HaMikdash outside the Beit HaMikdash and a number of different institutions that the leaders put into place to either remember the Beit HaMikdash or to avoid bad practices or wrong practices once the Beit HaMikdash was going to be rebuilt. So that concludes these three Mishnayot. We'll start with Mishnah Dalet, hopefully tomorrow. Amen.